I always say to people, we have this idea that acceptance is the opposite of change. Actually, it's not. Acceptance is not the opposite of change. It's the beginning of change. Once you accept that you have a problem, once the people around you accept that you have a problem that you're a little out of control of, that's the moment that you can actually begin to change. So as a spouse or a family member, accepting that this is a problem is not saying it's okay. It's not condoning it. It's not the opposite of change.
You just heard our guest on Focus on the Family last time talking about spouses or family members who would do well to understand that by loving and accepting their loved one, even though they're struggling with pornography addiction, without heaping on shame and guilt, they're essentially taking a step closer to helping the healing process. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Alison Schnell, and our host is Focus on the Family Africa's CEO, Graham Schnell.
Well, Alison, we had a great discussion last time with Claire Moore, just talking about pornography addiction. And I think she did a great job to help us understand the difference between addiction and the use of pornography. We understand pornography itself is bad, it's wrong, it's harmful. But the way we approach it is different depending on whether the person is addicted or not.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I loved listening to Claire's explanations of the differences, but yeah, she just demystified some of the things that I think we've all believed in the past. And I'm really looking forward to hearing from her again, because there's so much more that she can shed light on. So we're really happy to have Claire back in the studio with us. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you.
Well, I've got some research stats just as we begin this program. And this was from the Barna Group, who are a Christian organization, but a professional research agency in the United States. They published some research a few years ago. And there's a lot of detail here, but Christian men between 18 and 30 years old, 77% look at pornography at least monthly. 32% admit being addicted to pornography. And then the statistics for Christian men ages 31 to 49, 64% view pornography at least monthly. 18% admit being addicted to pornography. And to me, that just highlights the prevalence of this issue. It is a very real issue, probably one of the biggest issues facing family in our day and age, partly because of the accessibility, but it has got so much deeper roots than just that. And so, Claire, it's so great to have you back on the program. And I think as we begin this next program, really want to delve into the family, how it is affecting the family, and certainly how we can treat it better from a family perspective. And I know last time we spoke a lot about the approaches, and how when we just continue to add shame and guilt to a person who is addicted to pornography, it only feeds that addiction. It doesn't stop it. And so we want to talk about it within the context of a family, marriage therapy, if we can call it that. How do we deal with this issue of pornography as a unit, as a family unit? Help us understand what marriage therapy is.
So, I mean, first thing to say is that I think marriage therapy is absolutely essential when you're dealing with an issue of pornography addiction. I think that both marriage therapy and individual therapy for the person who is addicted to the pornography is important. I think it's important to bring in the spouse, because so much of this can not only create conflict in the marriage, you know, oftentimes resulting in divorce, but it can also, you know, responses from the spouse can either support or add to the addiction. Now, I want to be very clear to say that the person's addiction is definitely not the fault of the spouse. It is definitely not due to any lack in the spouse, but certainly their responses can be helpful or unhelpful in the process of the addiction.
Yeah.
So, you know, the marriage counseling would be for the purpose of that, as well as to just assist the spouse. You know, this can be a very painful thing to find out about your spouse, and it can create a deep sense of hurt in the spouse. It can cause self-esteem issues, betrayal, all those sort of things. And it's important also that spouse receive some support in their own dealing ability to deal with that issue.
Hmm. What about the understanding of tough love? We talk about that even with parenting. For a wife to say this is not acceptable, and so I'm drawing a line here. How does that play out in this kind of scenario?
So there are a lot of situations in which tough love works very well, but as a general rule, tough love does not work well in situations of mental health issues, diagnosable disorders. And we would always advise parents or anybody to not use tough love in situations of actual diagnosable mental health issues.
Yeah, including addiction.
Including addiction. Yeah. What can happen if one applies that sort of tough love strategy is that by doing that, one is increasing consequence. Mm. By increasing consequence, by increasing guilt, you can actually add to the cycle of addiction. Now, the cycle of addiction is a situation where addiction is generally caused by a person requiring that behavior or substance in order to cope. Mm-hmm. That, in this case, pornography then becomes the person's primary coping mechanism.
Mm. And so, they're coping with this deficiency that they have, this negative emotion that's then fueled by the shame and guilt.
Right.
Is that correct?
So the moment that the person actually experiences negative emotion, the first thing that they want to do is turn to pornography. Mm. So actually what we want to be doing is decreasing negative emotion, not increasing it.
Sure.
With shame and guilt and consequences.
Yeah. Just as somewhat of a sidebar, if the husband is asking or demanding of the wife to play out in their sexual relationship things that he's been exposed to, that's an area where the wife can and should draw the line, I would imagine.
I mean, absolutely. And that applies to any relationship, whether the person is involved with pornography or not.
Sure.
In the case of pornography, what we do see is an escalation over time. A person often moves from, viewing of pornography into a desire to act out those situations, either online. We're finding a lot of amateur pornography being exchanged as part of the acting out. We're finding a lot of chat room kind of situations as part of the acting out. Mm. But that acting out can sometimes want to enter the actual relationship. Mm. And yes, I think that anything that a partner, a spouse, whether that's wife or husband, is not comfortable with in the bedroom, they should feel absolutely, justified to draw that boundary. Mm. If that's causing conflict in the marriage, then of course, marriage therapy can be a wonderful way to talk about that, to learn communication skills, to find compromise within what is comfortable for the spouse.
So marriage therapy, and I think you make a good point when you say this, the spouse. We understand that this can be an addiction for women and men.
Right.
And sometimes we tend to generalize, and I think somewhat fair to generalize that it's more commonly the man, but we do acknowledge that there are women that are being addicted to pornography. But let's use the example of the husband that is addicted to pornography. How do you get the wife on board? How do you get her to recognize, first of all, that she has a role to play, that role isn't adding shame and guilt because it's only going to make the problem worse? How do you help her get past that feeling of betrayal and hurt to be someone who can be that partner, that teammate that can actually help her husband get through this?
Absolutely. The very first step in our process would be to validate the wife's feelings. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely normal for a wife to feel hurt, to feel betrayed, to feel somehow lacking, to feel not good enough. And it's really, really important to acknowledge that those feelings are very real and that she is entitled to those feelings. But then once those feelings have been acknowledged, you can actually begin to help that wife to let go of those feelings by helping her to understand that the pornography addiction is not due to any sort of lack in her. In fact, probably it preceded the marriage most often. Probably whatever actually is psychologically contributing to the addiction has been very, very long term. Mm. And so, once the wife begins to understand that it's not that she's not attractive enough, It's not that she's not fulfilling her husband's needs. It's not any lack in her. That is a very big first step in helping that wife to come on board with the process. Then helping her to understand what addiction is. And first of all, helping her perhaps to see that, that this person can be diagnosed with an addiction. And then helping her to see that cycle of shame that we mentioned a moment ago, see how that cycle of shame operates so that she can see how she could actually be supportive in that process.
And give us an example of that. I know maybe not using actual couples in your practice because of confidentiality, but hypothetically, talk us through that scenario when it works, when a wife does get on board. We know that it's not going to be necessarily completely smooth sailing from that. There are very often lapses, as there are with many other kinds of addiction. But when the spouse is on board, when the friends are on board, the family, the church, the community, how can that play out in a way that leads to healing and coming free from this addiction?
Absolutely. And I have seen this work many times with couples that I have dealt with in my practice. You know, one of the wonderful things that happens when you're able to work with a couple together is that you can improve communication and connection between the two of you. You can actually get them talking about the problem so that now the husband or wife, as the case may be, has a space in which to talk about what they're feeling. You can create a situation where actually when the person who's addicted to the pornography goes into a craving state, which is when they would really be driven to look at that pornography, that they can actually phone their spouse or make contact with their spouse. And, you know, I found that very often if you look at the neurology, when a person becomes addicted to pornography, their sexual response becomes divorced from their sexual partner and becomes tied to pornography. So my thinking is, if we can, every time that sexual response is activated, if we can retie that back to the spouse, we might actually be able to create a neurological change so that sexual response actually is retied back to the spouse rather than the pornography. So you end in a situation where actually, you know, instead of turning to the pornography, you're turning to your spouse instead.
Sure. And you've seen that. Have you seen cases where when you're able to remove that guilt and shame, to stop that cycle of the negative emotions leading to further pornography use, that you can actually, by getting everyone on board and helping to be that support structure, that you can create that neurological change, because ultimately that is what's happening in the brain. There's neurological changes that take place because of the pornography addiction, but you can somewhat reverse that.
Well, this is my own personal theory. I have seen it working. You know, I mean, at present, obviously, the cases are not huge numbers, but I'm seeing very promising results in that.
And marriage is staying together. I mean, that's it. We're about marriages staying together and recognizing that this is a major issue. And we hope to do what we can to stop it before it happens, certainly. But if it's there, how do we actually try and bring resolution while keeping the marriage together?
Absolutely. And an important part also of keeping the marriage together is about warning the spouse that lapses are so likely and so possible. Most spouses, usually wives, have the misconception that once the person stops, that's it. They've stopped and it's the end.
Yeah.
And in reality, if we are dealing with an addiction, lapse is an almost inevitable part of that process. So what happens when people don't realize that is that when that lapse happens, the betrayal happens all over again.
It's deeper.
The deceit happens all over again. The pain is twice as bad as it was before. Whereas, and of course the person wants to lie about it because they're aware that this is going to cause so much pain. And then you now have deception on top of actually the pornography viewing. Whereas when the spouse is aware that the lapses are possible, it is easier for the person who's addicted to the pornography to come to their spouse and say, this is what's happened. Mm. I've had a lapse. Yeah. We need to talk about it. Mm. It creates a situation where those lapses can become absolutely invaluable learning opportunities. Every time a person has a lapse, you can go back to that lapse. You can look at what was the trigger, what actually happened in your mind, what was the thinking, where were your points of choice, when could you actually have changed your thinking, how can you do this differently the next time around?
Yeah.
And that is what is going to help to actually prevent those lapses and make them more and more infrequent.
Yeah.
But of course, if those lapses are associated with shame and guilt and are hidden away, they never become those learning opportunities.
I think the key for me in all of this is that idea of guilt and shame,
right.
And I understand it. And I think it's been the history of this that we associate guilt and shame with pornography. But understanding that when it's an addiction, we have to try and remove that guilt and shame in order, or at least as much as possible, recognizing that the issue of pornography is still wrong and harmful, but that it's not who the person is. It's
right.
not their character. And we can try and get people to understand that. We can remove that negative emotion to help prevent relapsing or lapsing. How do we do that in a culture that sees or that covers this issue of pornography in guilt and shame? What are some of the things that we can do? I just see maybe Christian leaders standing up and speaking out more about the fact that they've been addicted. I think even of Alcohol Anonymous, where they kind of own it. I am so and so, and I am an alcoholic, and I've been clean for this long, but I'm owning the fact that I've struggled with this and I've come through this. Do you think that's what's needed to try and help remove some of that guilt and shame?
The way I see it, if we can see that pornography viewing is a behavior that does not define who a person is, we can reduce the shame that's associated with it. And if we can reduce the shame, we can get people to actually stand up and step forward. You know, we see within things like Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, NA, it is the people who've been through this that have the most power in actually fighting for people who are struggling with this addiction.
Yeah.
The people who've been through this are the ones that understand the best. They are able to empathize in a way that perhaps most people are not. And I think in the situation of pornography addiction, a lot of people are kept silent by the entire culture of guilt and shame that we have around it. If we can change our attitudes to pornography addiction, if we can see it as an addiction, if we can see it as a behavior that needs to be changed but does not define a person, I think a huge army of people are going to be able to step forward in the fight against pornography. It's really important to help people distinguish between guilt and remorse. People often see those two things as one and the same, but they're quite different. Remorse is a feeling of being sorry for something. It's a feeling that you recognize that thing is wrong, that you don't want to repeat that behavior, that you need to change it, you want to change it, you're motivated to change it.
Yeah.
Guilt, on the other hand, is that feeling when the behavior is able to attack the self. When we allow an idea that a behavior is wrong to make us believe that we're not good enough on the inside. And there's been quite a lot of research that has actually shown that it's very, very helpful to separate behavior from person, particularly, and there's been some research specifically in pornography addictions around this issue, that if we can actually say this is a behavior, we don't condone the behavior, you may be remorseful about the behavior, that is a good motivator for change. But when that person turns that into guilt, when they start to believe that behavior makes them a not good enough person,
that's who they are,
when they begin to feel that the pornography addiction defines them, it pushes them into guilt and back into the cycle of addiction.
Well, what about our kids? Because we're talking marriage and family, and we recognize that this is something that's affecting our children as well. Some of the stats there, again, huge numbers of kids that are exposed to pornography at an early age. Very often not going looking for it. It's something that finds them rather than they finding it. Do a lot of the same approaches apply to children? And what are the things that we can do even just to try and prevent this in our homes?
So certainly children being exposed to pornography is incredibly damaging. Research suggests that the earlier the exposure, the more damaging it is for the child. And we do live in a world where exposure to pornography is very difficult to prevent. Certainly, there are a lot of adult content blockers that one can use to put onto your router, your computer, your iPad, your iPhone, whatever it is. But research is showing us that actually this does not prevent children from being exposed to pornography.
Oh, really?
So whilst we should absolutely do everything we can to prevent that exposure, I think we also need to talk to children about what pornography is. Mm. We need to start probably around the age of six, just not talking about pornography specifically at that age, but explaining to them the dangers of the internet.
Yeah.
Explaining to them that if they do happen to come across anything that they don't understand or that upsets them, that they should immediately come to us as parents to talk about that, and that, you know, we won't be angry with them, that we will just, you know, talk them through. As they get a little bit older into perhaps the early teen years, perhaps even preteen, we can even start to talk to them about the fact that there is this thing called pornography on the internet, you know, that if they are exposed again, that they should come and talk to us. And I think the key is opening lines of communication with your kids.
Yeah, I know even with our own daughter, we were kind of saying, okay, well, we need to put these measures in place so that we know that you're safe. And she kept saying, well, you know, I know that there's bad things that are on the internet, and I know that you need to, you know, keep me safe from these things. But we realized she had no idea what we were keeping her safe from.
Right. What were the bad things?
She just didn't have any clue. I mean, she's only 10. I say only 10. But as you say, perhaps from 10, you start saying, well, actually, this is what we're referring to.
Right.
Just to preempt that and to give them the knowledge that they need. But it's a scary thing that the kids are being exposed to pornography and things that they shouldn't be seeing younger and younger. And yeah, it's quite daunting as a parent, I would say.
And I think that, as you say, we can put those protections in place, and we should do that. But then they go to school and they have a friend who has a phone, even if they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Or they go to a party, or they go outside of that zone of protection, and that's where, while we must do what we can to protect and limit exposure, we also have to prepare them for, I won't say inevitable, but the likely possibility that they're going to come across this at some point, and then how they deal with that.
And so much of the amount of damage that is done is actually based on parental response. Not all of it. There is some damage that is just done by viewing that image. And, of course, it depends what the image is, or whether it's a video or that sort of thing. But so much is based on our response. You know, if our response as parents is judgmental of them, is angry, is punishing, they're immediately going to, first of all, shut down, not communicate with us ever again about that particular issue. And they're going to immediately go into a space of guilt and shame, which, as we've seen, can be the forebearers of pornography addiction. Whereas if we are actually able to talk through that experience with them, we can probably actually heal that experience right there and then. I say to parents, you know, you need to ask your children questions. You need to know what they've seen. And sometimes that can actually mean going and having a look at what they've seen so that you know what they've seen. You need to obviously explain it to them in different ways. If it is pornography that is depicting fairly normal sexuality, you can explain to them, this is fairly normal sexuality. You know, it's not good that there's been pictures or video taken of it. It's not good that this is out there on the internet, but this is normal. If it's perverse sexuality or paraphilias, you know, then it would be important to explain that to him and them in a different sort of way, to explain to them that this is not normal. And in the case of sort of very perverse sexuality or paraphilias like violence, rape, child abuse, those sorts of pornography, you're going to want to take that child for some professional help to get through that experience.
I think it bears the point as well that we should be talking to our kids about sex and actually proclaiming what God intended to be a beautiful thing within the bounds of marriage. Because when they have at least had that conversation, understand that, you've got that platform to start from when you do have that conversation for them to understand, actually, no, this isn't what God intended. This is something perverse and wrong that's been put on the internet, but I've understood from this conversation with my mom and dad that it's not evil and wrong and bad. Sex isn't. Actually, it's a good thing within marriage. So that's something we can start with. Well, Claire, thank you so much for being with us on Focus on the Family, talking about a subject that is something maybe difficult to talk about, not an easy topic, but one that's very relevant and very important. And I think you've brought a lot of clarity to the issue, and being able to distinguish between different forms of pornography, or at least exposure to pornography, that's helped the listening audience. So thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Claire. It's been really great to have you on the show.
Well, that was another great conversation with Claire Moore today. And if you missed the first part of the program yesterday, you can find it on our website, Facebook page, or via podcast. It is vitally important that we are speaking about this issue of pornography, and that we're offering those who may have become addicted to pornography a helpline. Claire has illuminated the facts about pornography addiction, and her message is one that can bring freedom to those who are seeking help. If you would like to speak to one of our counselors, please do not hesitate to call us on 031-716-3300, or alternatively, log on to safamily.co.za and scroll down to the counseling link. You'll also find the Discovering God's Freedom from Pornography series on our website. This includes videos, articles, and audio programs, all designed to help you find freedom in this area. And if you want a better understanding of addiction of all kinds, you may enjoy our Focus on the Family Addiction Collection, which is a CD in MP3 format with some of our most popular broadcasts on addiction. Visit safamily.co.za or give us a call on 031-716-3300. Thanks for being with us today. For Focus on the Family Africa, I'm Alison Schnell, inviting you back next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.